It's Friday, September 28th, 2012, and welcome to episode 137 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
And I'm Cindy Rich.
Welcome back to another episode, and this time we have several different topics for you. So first up, I want to just mention right at the top of the show that there may be something coming up in the middle of October that may affect listeners of Tech Talk for Teachers, so I want to make sure I mention it here up front. And this may affect some of you out there if you are doing anything with RSS feeds.
Right. We don't want to lose anybody.
That's right. So Google, who is the company in charge of FeedBurner, will be making some changes, I believe, October 20th, and I'm not sure how they will impact what's called an RSS feed. And those of you that use Blogger, if you subscribe to our FeedBurner account, I think that service is going to be okay, but I'm not sure about the podcasting portion. So if you happen to see in the next couple weeks, if you don't happen to get the next episode, please go to eiu.edu/ITC. That's our main website where I kind of link off the different posts. So, you know, we certainly don't want to lose any listeners out there because we appreciate every one of you. But we'll post some more info out there as I know a little bit more. And if we have to go to a different service, this will also affect our iTunes University subscribers because my FeedBurner feed is what we use to outreach to the iTunes University. So I'm hoping that will all get worked out. Right. There's just too many questions right now to know, but I do want to let you know up front.
And we'll have some information up there so to help you find us and help you get reconnected, and just in case that does happen.
Yes. So anyway, on the show this time, we thought we'd share a couple of things that we've been working on the past couple of weeks. And first up, I was working this week with a faculty member on a blogging exercise, which we'll share some of the trials and tribulations there on some of the technology and some of the wireless access issues and things that we've had and that we've kind of resolved in some ways. And then, Cindy, I think you're going to talk a little bit about the book festival.
Right. The book festival, National Book Festival, wrapped up and was a huge success. And just, again, how they're making that available to those of us who couldn't go there. And so when we're using our wireless that we're going to talk about to access those audio and video feeds, the things that we need to keep in mind.
Okay. And then, of course, we'll finally wrap it up with our technology picks of the week. So here we go. At the top of the show today, I thought we would take a few minutes here to kind of talk about some of the things that's happened over the past couple of weeks. So one of the things that I've been working on the past couple of weeks is integrating the technology into the classrooms. And specifically, there was a fairly significant project where we had a faculty member want to use a blog for their class. Mm-hmm. The assignment was every student was to go out to like blogspot.com and make up make their own blog to publish out there for the world over a particular topic.
Ah, so a brand new one for every student.
For every single student in the class. And I just want to take a few minutes to kind of talk about the logistics of that, what went well, what didn't go so well, and just, you know, maybe help some people out there that are wanting to do some similar things.
Right, and what we can do to prevent problems if we try to do something like that.
So, I mean, great concept pedagogically, you know, getting things set up. So they're going to be publishing, and the instructor shared the URLs, you know, with the entire class so the class can look. But not only that, because it's out there, it's a worldwide audience.
Sure.
So people are writing to an authentic audience, which I think, you know, makes them pay a little bit more attention and put a little bit more effort into it. But one of the first challenges out of the gate, of course, is getting the user IDs and passwords, which, you know, really is not an issue for college students anyway.
Right.
You know, being that they're adults, there's no minor issues, and, you know, under 13 and some of the things that K-12 has to worry about. But, you know, that went smoothly. But in the classroom, we happen to have 34 students in this particular one. So we checked out one of the netbook carts, and we had the students bring in their own laptops. So it was kind of a BYOD, bring your own device, bring your own tech. And one of the things that we have here at Eastern is a program called Safe Connect, which is the wireless
Right. That's what we log into when we come into campus.
It authenticates you and says, you know, are you a legitimate EIU student, faculty, staff? So that was the first challenge, whether they had their own personal laptop or netbook. Of course, our carts that we check out have all that preloaded, so there wasn't anything.
Right. But if they had used them in their apartment and had never actually used them on campus, that was a step that you had to go through.
Right. So, and, you know, again, that wasn't such a big hurdle. So that went fairly well. But then the bigger challenge, we're kind of a victim of our own success. I think we're very forward-thinking here at EIU, and we have for years had a wireless infrastructure on campus.
We do.
For all campus buildings. And, you know, that's a significant number, and we've provided that blanket coverage. But now then, as the technology becomes more and more integrated, we're running into those density issues.
Sure.
Where we have 34 students in one classroom hitting one access point.
At one time.
At one time. And, you know, some of those things we talked about, you know, with some of the troubleshooting things that we talked about. So conceiving these projects, you know, right now, unfortunately, there's a few workarounds. These are all very workable, and all of them have solutions. The ultimate solution is to buy, you know, more access, more capacity. But, you know, we're all working within, you know, budgetary constraints.
True.
And you can never get a big enough pipe out to the internet, as we've proven over and over and over
again. As soon as we think we have enough, it isn't.
So, I mean, a blog assignment's a very low bandwidth. I mean, it's basically text. So it's not like we're doing the flipped instruction and, you know, downloading massive amounts of video. But it still does prove a challenge whenever you get that concentrated number.
Simultaneously.
So went over and worked with the faculty member, both as kind of a technical support and on the instructional side, and it worked out very well. We just kind of broke things into groups, and if you like group A, group B, group C, and group D, and you have four or five students log on, let that group finish up and then turn group B loose, rather than have all 34 students hit enter at the same time to log in.
Right.
And that worked out very well.
And that's one of those that, you know, we have these experiences where you have to do it once to realize.
Right.
And once you do that, then you learn things like that are preventative. You know, they really are their precautions that will save you time in the long run. And those are the things that are great to share with our colleagues.
Right. And on the IT side of things, on the infrastructure side of things, we had our ITS department kind of do some packet captures and things as far as seeing, you know, the capacity things. So we have some data to, like, what do we have to do to beef this up, you know, the next time? It's difficult to do because I think we have like 210 or 220 classrooms here on campus.
Wow.
So, you know, we have many more than that access points. So it's kind of an on-demand thing. We can't really predict that, you know, on 10 o'clock on next Thursday, we're going to have 30 students using this Wi-Fi. You know, it's a fixed access point, so we can't really scale it up dynamically, like doing load balancing on servers or something. You know, we can throw some more processors and things on the back end for some of the web technologies, but we just can't do that on the front end on the actual access.
Right.
It worked out well there. You know, there were some issues with some slowdowns and things, but it certainly wasn't insurmountable.
And very cool. You know,
the instructor did an excellent job setting up the activities, and the students are very engaged and very into it.
One, so it's structured.
It's structured. It's within their discipline, so they're all extremely interested. So I think we'll see some good things come out of it.
Very cool. Well, and some of them probably could have just pulled out their smartphones.
Actually, they did.
Did they?
They did. They had some issues last week, and I was not there, so that kind of prompted, you know, the call for me to come in. And they were able to do that. And what that does essentially is, of course, bypass, you know, the local access point. Mm-hmm. And in this particular area, we're dealing with Verizon, Sprint, AT&T, you know, whatever service the students had. But that, of course, is coming at the cost of their data plan.
Right. But, you know, like my phone, I'm on Verizon. And as soon as I get on campus, I'm on the campus Wi-Fi.
Right.
I'm not using my data,
which is
more of a drain on that system.
Right. I think we've talked about this before. It's huge because every one of those smart devices are, you know, they're grabbing an IP number.
They're pulling, right.
So, again, on the capacity side, and that is an issue. So we have to kind of work on, it's called a lease. You can go out there and adjust the time of a lease. But the difficult problem with that is, as a student walks from building A to building B to building C, you know, every time they walk by, they're grabbing another IP as they go to a different access point.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So, you know, there's some things that we have to work on, or actually our ITS department deals with this. And, you know, we just seen the mobile usage skyrocket here.
Oh, I can imagine.
There's just certain things that you can't do, whether it be a tablet or, you know, your smaller sized mobile phone, that you still require that netbook or PC to access.
So does a phone take less bandwidth than a tablet or a PC?
No,
or
it's bits or bits.
Because you're pulling, yeah, okay. All right.
Yeah, it really doesn't matter. Now, where it could make a difference, you know, many sites have mobile websites.
Right.
So that would cut down versus, you know, pulling.
True. But if you're pulling in audio or video, it's
bits or bits. So, yeah. And that's
interesting.
And that's where I worry with students with our data plans, because like mine is a 5 gigabyte cap. And if, you know, that's not very many YouTube videos or whatever to go through. And that's a painful experience to learn once you go over your cap, because they charge extra for every megabyte or whatever it is over, you know, the overage fees. But yeah, just sitting here thinking about that, you know, we have over 10,000 students here, and if that's, you know, probably a typical cell phone bill, I'm guessing like $80 or something a month. Mm-hmm. So, you're looking whatever that is, $800,000 or something like that a month. So there's some significant dollars going into those mobile devices.
Oh, absolutely, and employees as well, faculty and staff, and
well, faculty and staff on top of that. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's something that's always a moving target. And like I said, we, as much as possible, always upgrade and increase the bandwidth pipe. And fortunately, price has come down for the megabytes that's delivered. Unfortunately, we're using more megabytes,
right.
So it's kind of a wash there in the end. So that was some of the things that, you know, we were working with, and some interesting things going on. You know, like I said, that's kind of a victim of our own success there in dealing with some of these. And we certainly want the technology to be, you know, to be used out there. And it's so rewarding to see something, some authentic activity like that, where they're going to be really immersed in the content.
Well, and the beauty of that is that because of what you do behind the scenes, it's just a natural fit. It's an authentic use, because you don't have to stop everything to go through the steps of setting it up.
Right.
And that, because that infrastructure is in place.
Right.
And so it allows it, you become more comfortable with it. And anything you're more comfortable with, you're going to use much, much more.
Right.
And so hopefully we're empowering our students by giving them access to all of these things and making them comfortable using those tools. Next up, we're going to talk a little bit about some Library of Congress connections.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing is the National Book Festival that just wrapped up.
Yeah, I saw that in my Twitter stream this last week or so.
It was so active.
It was.
A lot of teachers are tweeting.
And I kept thinking, I wish I could be there.
Oh, me too. But the number of tweets this year compared to last year, I've not seen any documentation of this, but from what I witnessed, it increased so much.
Mm-hmm.
Teachers are embracing the hashtag and everything.
Yeah.
And that has just exploded, is how they're sharing things.
Yeah.
And I think that's so exciting to
yeah.
see that happen. But the festival, of course, was a huge success. And it was another gathering of some of, you know, just the greatest authors and huge fans of reading, which we should all be, but some mm-hmm. of us more than others.
But I went out there and was doing some investigation from what you had talked on the last couple of shows, and I watched a lot of the videos, and then they have the audio.
Right.
So I really like it where they break the audio separate from the video, so you can choose, you know, what format.
And it's interesting because some of the authors have been there multiple years, and so you can find their presentation from 2009 mm-hmm. when they had one book, and mm-hmm. now they have a new book and they're presenting on that one. So from the 2012, so far they've only added about 15 of the audio podcast in their archive
mm-hmm.
records, but the rest of them are going to be added soon. But something I found that was kind of cool, they had a kids guide, or a teacher, and there's a teacher and students page,
mm-hmm.
and they had a children's guide to the book festival. And in that, they had, you know, some cool little word searches and trivia and different things. But it was a schedule, and it said, oh, you know, this person, you know, did this or wrote this book. And you can see them at XYZ here.
Right.
And as I was looking at it, I'm like, wow, some of these people have already been added to the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, what a neat thing to put in your classroom to take something along those lines and have that same information, but just link to the podcast.
Right.
Instead of sending, you know, the students can't go hear the person live, but we can still use that information. And so by just posting things like that, that if you have, you know, time in your classroom, students can go listen to it there.
Right.
Or homework. Maybe it's something a student would like to do with their parents.
Right. Or, and doing those differentiated assignments where, you know, student A is interested in this and student B, they can kind of pursue their own path for,
right,
for whatever author they're interested in.
Right. And the different, those different learning styles we talk about all the time where sometimes, you know, that audio is huge in reaching a student. And so I thought that was, because I love the little, you know, students, children's guide.
Right.
I was like, oh man, but we're not there. How could I still incorporate those really neat trivia questions and fun facts that they had on that PDF into the podcasts that are out there? So, you know, it's just another example of how we can use that information. But it's just another way that we can access that information on our own schedule. And that is huge and so helpful to teachers and students and parents. So,
and we'll put the links in the show notes and things out here. But I'm looking at the Library of Congress's website right now, and it says Two Glorious Days, 125-plus authors. So, you know, they've got all that. And as you said, you know, it just happened this past weekend, so it will take them some time to go through. I mean, I'm just think of the editing job. As a fellow podcaster, I certainly appreciate the editing and things that, you know, are going on right now as I record that and get those things posted. So we'll be looking forward to some of those podcast and video cast in the future.
Absolutely. And you know, just keep checking often because that'll be changing. And then the other thing on the Library of Congress website, that they've added a brand new site that's congress.gov. And that's going to sort of be what was on Thomas with legislative information. So it's very different than the primary source activities that we do. But anyone who's wanting to stay on top of legislative information or what's going on in the Senate or
social studies teachers and things,
current events, anything like that, it's still in the beta format. But this congress.gov looks like it's going to be a really useful site. And so I'm sure they would love to hear comments if anybody wants to go out and take a look at it and give them some feedback.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
One thing, and again, I forget if we've talked about certain topics, but, you know, the Kindle Fire HDs come out in the last month or so coming up. And you were mentioning something with the podcast. And for our audience, particularly the K-12 teachers, the children literature section, they, you know, they had several different children literature authors there. But one of the new technologies in the Kindle Fire HD is something they're calling immersion reading, where it'll do like the read aloud, which we've had this technology before, but it will highlight the words as you listen to it. But Amazon's stepping it up a notch, that what they're trying to do is tie the electronic book, you know, the reading portion of it with the audio portion. So there's starting to be a number of titles that you can buy the ebook, and then I think on their site, I think it's usually like $3.95 more, you get the Audible or the audio version of that. And then for the children's version, you can have, you know, it will highlight the word as you're listening to it.
Wow, that's great. So it's a multi-sensory.
It is. And what's exciting, and really the first time I can really think of this transmedia experience, you know, they've had this whisper sync, you know, since the Kindles come out, where it will remember the page that you read, you know.
That is so cool.
You turn it on. But what they're evolving to in this next generation of technology is, if you buy these combination units, you can be reading the book, you know, on your ebook reader, stop it, and then if you have the audio portion, it will remember where you stopped. And say you get to your car and do, you know, doing some commuting, you can listen to the audio version. And whenever you stop the player in the audio version and go home and pick up your Kindle again, it will remember where you left off listening and start that page, which that's just amazing technology to me to even think about.
It is. You know, and sometimes it's amazing in a good way. Sometimes it freaks you out a little bit.
Yeah, and I'm sure they're having to work through licensing issues, because I remember whenever they were trying to do their text-to-speech technology, some of the people, particularly the Authors Guild, were saying that, you know, that's a different format, so therefore we require different licensing. You know, we were meant for this to be a book. In those days, a physical, you know, a physical paper book, but it's certainly disrupting the publishing industry, and it's offering new possibilities.
Well, and anything, you know, we've talked about how our children, it's so natural for them.
They don't think twice about it. Yeah.
Right. They were born using the technology and the different ways of getting information, the different formats that we didn't have. You know, I can remember in elementary and grade school, having the slides that were like eight squares and you slid it down. And that was so exciting, because otherwise you had no multimedia in school.
Right.
And so now it's just integrated into everything they do from the very beginning of their lives. And so we do have to step it up a little bit in the classroom.
So yeah, it's becoming ubiquitous, and there's going to be, I'm sure, a lot of tablets given for Christmas gifts this year, because we've had the Kindles come out, we've had the Nexus, which is the one I purchased, and then rumors for October, we'll probably be reporting on this, I hope sometime in October, rumors of possibly an iPad 7-inch version.
And I heard, was there a new Nook?
The new Nooks are, I believe, are out now. The Nook, I think they're calling those the Nook HDs. So, but they're, you know, they're building on these ecosystems, and, you know, not only pushing the ebooks but also the videos, and, you know, like kind of like a Netflix type server or service. So yeah, the world's really changing. And then at the end of October, the Windows 8, all the new Windows 8 devices, and that's going to be another evolution on the PC side of the world, because all kinds of new hardware is coming out to go along with the software. And I think people will be surprised at, you know, some of the things that are going to be coming out and how different they are from traditional PCs.
Wow. That'll be something to talk about on future.
That'll be our November edition. So, all right. Thank you.
Very good.
My technology pick of the week this week is an audio pick. I'm going to choose SoundCloud.com as my technology pick this week. And one of the reasons that I would like to choose this one, we have, those of you that subscribe to our podcast, we use something called an RSS feed, and we use FeedBurner. And possibly things may be changing on October 20th coming up with FeedBurner. It's a free service. It's owned by Google. But if you do use that RSS feed, there is a possible chance that it may no longer work after October.
And I have subscriptions through that and wasn't aware of that. So I think it's great that we're letting people know, because a lot of people may not know that that's on the horizon.
Right. And Google announced this like a year ago. They call it a deprecation. So they're taking some services away that they once provided. And it's changes in their API, which is, you know, we're getting way technical here. But the bottom line is, you know, we certainly don't want to lose any listeners at all, because we certainly appreciate everybody that takes the time to listen. But I just want to give you a heads up that, you know, if something does happen in that way, you can always go to our main website, which is eiu.edu/ITC, and you'll find links to the Tech Talk for Teachers. And if something does change, I'll be sure to make like a big, you know, big red letters or something. You know, to resubscribe, we may have to use a different URL or something. That FeedBurner URL, currently, you know, Tech Talk for Teachers is on our Eastern iTunes University website. That FeedBurner RSS feed is what feeds iTunes University. So it could also impact that.
Sure.
Which, if it impacts that, that means it's other iTunes University. If you go out and do a, you know, search, no matter where you're at in the world, and type in Tech Talk for Teachers, you should find that to be able to subscribe to us. Right. So just a heads up that some things may be changing. And, you know, we're trying to accommodate the different ways, and there's so many different ways that people get our content. But I know with our students, I've been asking several of our our undergraduate students, you know, how do you consume media? How do you listen? And of course, YouTube's is one of those large answers. And then SoundCloud, and a lot of them are aware of this, the SoundCloud service. So I will put a link out in the show notes to SoundCloud. And then also kind of on the experimenting side, we have our EIU ITC YouTube channel. And I've been talking with a couple of my GAs and thinking about possibly posting our audio portion of Tech Talk for Teachers on that YouTube channel as well. I'm starting to notice a lot of audio content is going. I don't know why it is, if it's the ease of use or if that's just, you know, where students are going to find content. But, you know, these are all multiple ways of doing it.
So are you going to put Tech Talk for Teachers on SoundCloud?
No, my interest in SoundCloud, I may, you know, most Web 2.0 services, they of course offer a free version and they offer a professional version. Sure. And there's a bandwidth limit, a cap with it. What I was thinking about with the SoundCloud, my interest in it is, you know, one of the things I do a lot of is helping other students and teachers work with podcasting. And one of our struggles is always finding copyright, royalty-free sounds and things.
Oh, yes.
And I've always said this, and it's just hard to make the time, but I would like to post some, like, sound effect clips and things like that, just some really short ones, and make them copyright-friendly for teachers, that they don't have to go to some site and see, you know, 1,000 advertisements and
and
make a login account and get the spam emails and all the other things.
Where a list leads to a list leads to a list.
Right. there's a lot of those services. And a lot of them kind of mix and match the free content in with paid content. And it's frustrating whenever you finally find, you know, that one train whistle sound that you're looking for, and it's like, you know, it's going to cost you 99 cents or whatever. But, you know, that's something that I think that I would like to do and do that over time. So that's my interest in SoundCloud. And then the interest in the YouTube, as far as possibly putting that out underneath our Tech Share, which is our video portions that we try in this audio podcast. I know it's frustrating for me whenever I listen to audio podcasts and they're saying, look here, you click here and do all of that. But the benefit of doing that for the audio to YouTube is we also provide transcripts for our shows.
Right.
So, and I haven't tried this, but I see no reason why this wouldn't work. If we post a MP3 file up to YouTube and then sync my transcript with it, I would think that it would do the closed captioning, just like we're doing the closed captioning for, you know, kind of talking about that HD, Kindle HD, you know, having the two different formats of reading and listening and things. Sure. So we could do the same thing with the closed captioning, trying to explore some of those different possibilities and, you know, also hopefully pick up a different audience. One of the nice things about YouTube is you just go to a link and click and boom, you're listening. You don't have to download any software.
Exactly.
So I just want to give you a heads up that some changes may be underway there. So we'll be sure to keep you informed. But if something does change, you know, please go to eiu.edu/ITC and we'll provide instructions whenever we know more, because, you know, this may all continue to work.
Just play as we go.
Yep.
And if you start to miss us, then go look for us.
That's right. Just do a search and you'll be able to find us again. So, okay. So what do you have this week?
Well, I'm actually looking at a site that's called, as we're talking about YouTube, and this is something called Safe Share TV. Mm-hmm. And Safe Share TV, I think we've all been in a situation where we've pulled something up in front of our students online, and we've either, you know, gotten a website we didn't want or got an ad that we didn't necessarily want our students to see.
On YouTube,
Or
inappropriate comments that are very common.
Yes, yes. Or, you know, individuals who aren't dressed exactly appropriately.
Yes.
And so there are things like that, you know, we have to be really aware of, and it'd be nice to not have that one extra thing to deal with in the classroom. And Safe Share TV is a great way to do that, because what it lets you do is paste a YouTube link into the screen, and then it pulls it up in, and as you called it, a safe wrapper, I believe, which is nice, because it helps us feel better
about
what we're
sharing. Yeah, it just concentrates
on
the video, so you just have the video window, and it's SayShare.tv. And what's nice about it is, you know, the one thing I always kind of worry about on YouTube is when you get to the end, you never know what the most popular videos.
Yes.
And this blocks that. So at the end of your video, once you generate your safe link and go to that safe link, whenever the video stops, it just simply says replay.
Right. And then one of the things is we talked about, you know, it doesn't download and save it and pull it up separately. You still have to be live on the internet to do it and have your access. But it does take a little bit of that risk away for you.
So, yeah, I'm out here on the website, and I didn't know this, but at the very bottom it says available on the App Store. So it looks like they've got an app as well.
Who doesn't?
So, that's right. It's an, it's an app world. So. Okay, so yeah, I think that many teachers will find that one very helpful. Thank you.
Very good.
That wraps it up for episode 137 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. To leave a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment on the Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, this is Tom Grissom
and Cindy Rich.
Keep on learning.